Off the Ball, GAA.
We're just taking it game by game, really. Look, it's unbelievable to win this. It was one of our goals, but now going into Tyrone, that's a different competition, but we'll enjoy now a few days, to be fair.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
The Green Scene on Off the Ball with Cadbury, a proud sponsor of the Republic of Ireland football teams.
Welcome along to another episode of The Green Scene here on Off the Ball, your place for all things Irish football. And we're here at Match Week again. Who would have thought just a couple of weeks after the game in Prague that the boys in green will be back once again? Yes, Hamer Hargrimson's Republic of Ireland men's national team are going to be facing Grenada in a friendly at the Nuevo Condomina Murcia in Spain.
Muy bien.
Gracias. On Saturday evening, 5 o'clock kickoff time, Irish time. It's 6 o'clock local time, nice sunny Spain on Saturday evening. I can think of worse places that you could be.
Absolutely.
In the month of May. So we're going to go over the outlook of the squad and that game over the next 45 minutes or so, and how a couple of other players and managers are getting on around Europe. I'm delighted to say that I'm joined, as usual, by Matthew Brennan. Matthew, how are you doing?
I'll go, Ben. How are you getting on?
Very well. Mm. David Wilson, how are you?
Flying it.
The Green Scene on Off the Ball is brought to you by Cadbury, a proud sponsor of the Republic of Ireland football teams. It is match week. What's the kind of general feeling towards this? Is it apathy? Is it excitement? Is it nervous? Like, what is the actual feeling towards this game going ahead? Matthew, I'll start with you, maybe.
Okay. Well, I'm definitely not nervous. I'm not nervous at all. I'm looking forward to it. Looking forward to seeing some fresh faces donning the green jersey. And that's about it, really. Like, it's somewhat exciting, isn't it? It's different. It's probably not a feeling that I've kind of had before towards a game, you know? Usually you do get a little bit nervous regardless. Even the friendlies are kind of like, oh, what's going to happen here? What are we going to see? Is he going to do something that, you know, if you're playing a friendly that doesn't have huge significance, you'd kind of go, oh, well, if he does this, that might mean something for the next team, you know, for the big games. I don't think really whatever Hamer decides to do over the weekend is going to have a great impact on what we see in the Nations League. But there is obviously, and this is the point of this camp, is for him to get a look at some guys that he wouldn't have the opportunity to look at otherwise. And that's where the excitement is, because we'll also get the opportunity to have a look at these guys that we wouldn't get to see otherwise in the Ireland shirt.
It's a bit like the Green Scene camp, isn't it? Some of these players involved here.
What, young, yeah, fresh, yeah, it's talent? Like
the original Off the Ball Breakfast Green Scene was littered full of League 1, League 2 championships. Yeah. It's not quite that, to be fair.
No.
These guys are a little bit higher profile than that. But
if you're in the camp right now, what player would you be?
If I was in... No, oh, sorry, so you've taken it that way. You're saying, yeah, that, I was you're more saying going, that the three of us are...
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Okay,
I was more going, this is players that we've been talking about for the last couple of months.
I jumped on that as well. Yeah. If I was one player in the camp, whatever the best player is.
Yeah, first round.
Kidding, Carl.
Yeah. Okay, that's a dig.
Not a dig at all.
No.
Smashing footballer.
Yeah.
This camp is... It's a weird one, like, just the way the time of the year and stuff like that. But it is going to be interesting to see how things develop from here, and what sort of camps does him or Hargrimson get his kind of teeth into over the next maybe year or so. You know, he's obviously talked about the January camp as well before, that he'd like to do. There are some international teams that are heading into a World Cup camp obviously now over the next kind of few weeks as well. So from that perspective, it's a little bit disappointing that we've nothing to look forward to in the summer bar two friendly games. But other than that, it's an opportunity as well for players to, I suppose, get to know each other. And one thing I was reading about last week was there was a couple of camps that Wales did with Gary Speed and then obviously Chris Coleman after that, and they kind of built this together stronger mentality. And sometimes there's a lot of buzzwords and it maybe is a lot of bullshit, but like, Wales kind of brought all these players together. Obviously the two superstar players in Gareth Bale and Aaron Ramsey, but those kind of relationships and squads were kind of forged on these kind of maybe smaller camps and smaller kind of maybe friendlies that kind of, you know, kind of got people together, got players together, coaches staff together, and kind of created this siege mentality. And hopefully that's something that Ireland and the coaching staff, I know some of the coaching staff aren't all there, but something they can kind of grow ahead of the next kind of era of Irish football heading into the Euros in 2028.
The only thing is that I would say, and a feeling I didn't mention when I first spoke there is a little bit of disappointment, I will say, that we're not going to get to see Jade Newma, we're not going to get to see Harvey Vale in an Ireland shirt again this time round. We're not going to get to see Boston in a while. So that is a little bit, it's unfortunate. It was bound to happen to some degree, but I think to this degree is a little bit of a letdown as far as the experimentation side of it goes.
It's a funny point you make about the Welsh team, because obviously Wales were one of the teams that Ireland tried to play in this camp. It didn't end up coming to fruition, but when I associate Wales, I always think of, over the last 15 years, I always think of the likes of Ethan Ampadu and Harry Wilson and, you know, Ben Woodburn, those players who were brought through at young ages of 16, 17, 18. This is kind of our equivalent of that.
Yeah.
And maybe this is a chance for us now to bleed these young players into the camp, and we can kind of have those glory couple of years that the Wales had when they got a team who were playing together for a long time and knew each other inside out, on and off the pitch.
Yeah, well, here's hoping, because I don't know, I watched Spurs and Leeds last night, and Ethan Ampadu was one of the best players on the pitch, and that's a player that we really did miss out on. Obviously, he had options for England and then obviously options for Wales, but Wales got him in, I think, at 16. And fair play to him for maybe taking a punt on him, and he's turned out to be like one of the, maybe the more better central midfielders in England, especially this last couple of weeks in the Premier League this season. So yeah, the likes of Rory Finneran, I suppose, kind of comes to mind, who was highly impressive in the under 17 World Cup, and that's the type of player, that player that might have another option to go somewhere else, and you want to make your team, your country, or whatever it is, to be the most attractive kind of thing possible. And we spoke about feelings of nationality and different things, and how kind of complex and nuanced it is. So if you can just be, you know, the more maybe welcoming place, and the Irish camp hasn't been the most welcoming place, we know, over the years.
Allegedly,
but if you can kind of be like, I love playing for Ireland, I love meeting up with the lads, I love the coaching staff, I like the manager, well then that can only be a good thing.
Of course, Ethan Ampadu could have played for Ireland. His father, Kwame, born in North Dublin.
Yeah, born in raised. Portland Row or something.
Yeah. And he would have played for
the 21s, I think.
He did, and he did play. He made a couple of caps for Ireland in 21 before he went over to Arsenal. Actually, played my uncle before he went over. There you go. That's a fun fact.
Close acquaintance of Wilfred Nancy.
Huh?
Close acquaintance of Wilfred Nancy.
Yeah, assistant manager.
Followed him over to Celtic from America, yeah. So, look, as you touched on Rory Finneran there, there was initially 9 uncapped players in the squad. Joe Bagan, who was one of them, had to drop out. Casey McAteer is an early dropout, and unfortunately, I suppose, the big one. Before we get into who's been called up, Jade Numa is not going to appear for Ireland on Saturday. He was kind of the one that maybe was the star attraction or star talent, the name that your eye kind of got drawn to as soon as the squad was named. He's not going to be there. Benfica have an important game to get into the UEFA Youth League at the weekend. And Hamer said, look, we knew this was a possibility, didn't think it would be likely, but now it's happened. Like, how disappointed are we now that we're not going to see Jade Numa in this camp?
Yeah, as I alluded to there earlier on, like, I think it is obviously a major disappointment, and it's a bit of a letdown as far as this camp goes. You know, these are the guys we want to be seeing. These are the guys we want to be getting involved at a young age so that they're ready. And Jade Numa looks as though he is one of those that, I mean, out of all of that bunch from that under 17 World Cup team that we got to see a good bit of last summer, of course, he is the one that stood out the most, I suppose, as far as how ready he would be to step into the senior team. And we're not going to be able to see that at the weekend. And yes, of course, it is disappointing, but we will see him again. If this isn't the case of, you know, he's going to be gone now and the next call up he gets to some other country or whatever, like, you know, there is obviously the possibility for that to happen, but I don't think it will. And yeah, obviously on the face of it, it is disappointing, but it's not the end of the world, you know what I mean? It's not the end of the world.
Yeah, I think it's just disappointing from the fact that he's such an X-factor player, like we said last week.
Yeah, the excitement,
that, yeah. That he's totally different profile of player that we've maybe had for a long time. So, yeah, disappointed from that perspective. But, like, you know, club football is your bread and butter. You kind of, you know, it's a camp outside your international window. Yeah. It's totally understandable. But there's definitely a case for a lot of other players there to stake their claims. Like, I was watching the inside kind of behind the scenes training, and you know, you've got, like, I don't know, very short clips. let me just preface by that, but like Milanic Ali, like, is a player that I love to see playing, who's had like an unbelievable story of where he's come from and kind of come up through the leagues and like
perseverance,
and players like him that I'd say the dreams of an Irish senior call up a couple of years ago were a long, long way from his thoughts. And the type of player that Ireland have kind of done well with over the years is to have players who've come up through the leagues. I'm guessing, like, kind of John Walters is a good example of that. You know, who kind of dropped way down and kind of brought themselves all the way back up. There's another example earlier than that I just can't remember. But Yeah, like him as a winger, like as an attacking player, I think that's definitely someone we could be having a look at. And it's nice to see as well, like Dara O'Shea, Chidozie Ogbeni, Adamida, like they're now the leaders in the group. So it's an interesting week for the team and for the coaching staff as well.
That is something that Hamer alluded to the other day, saying he's also excited to see how those players cope with being the leaders, as you said. And of course, look, we could see Jade Newman at the camp at the end of the month against Qatar and Canada. That is a FIFA window, so the clubs have to release the players if they're called up for that one. So, look, we could talk so much about the disappointment of who's not there. One player who has been a late call-up is Rory Finneran. Before we get into talking about him, here is the man himself speaking today about getting called up to the Irish squad.
Rory, we're here in Spain, of course, your first senior international call-up. What a proud moment.
Yeah, no, a massively proud moment. Obviously, didn't really expect it. Got a late call-in, but... No, a massive achievement for me, and looking forward to the week.
Where were you when you found out, and what was your family's reaction as well?
Well, I was on my day off. I was at home, so I didn't reply for a couple hours to the gaffer. But I got a message, and then I spoke to him, and obviously he said he wanted us to come in. So and then I told my family, and they were really happy, and so was I.
That was Rory Finneran speaking to the FAI earlier today in Murcia. I think they're down at San Pedro is actually where the training camp is. But look, Rory Finneran is someone who we saw a lot of in the under-17 championship in Qatar last year. He's someone who we've heard a lot of. He made his debut very, very young. I think he was 15,
for
Blackburn.
Well, interestingly enough, he was 15, but he was born on a leap year. So
he's only had four birthdays,
yeah,
which is mental. before we talk about him, right, if Rory Finneran is to play for Ireland this weekend, and we think he will, he'll become the 8th youngest player to win a men's senior cap for Ireland. How many of the previous 7 can you name?
I won't even.
The 8th youngest player. Well,
David's the 8th youngest. King of the crappy quiz here, so I let
him. Hold on, before you go, throw out a few. I'm not letting you get away with nothing.
Should we maybe come back to it and see if we can get some comments in to see if people can name the 7 youngest players?
People who are on YouTube, if you can think of any of the 7 younger players than Rory Finneran.
What age will Rory Finneran be this week?
He's 18.
Okay, yeah. So
any of the 7 younger ones, get them into the YouTube comments.
Yeah, work away there. And also people who are listening back to this, you know, after the fact it's been live, just make sure you come here next week and get in the comments.
Yeah. And that, I won't start naming or try to name.
No, leave it for
and actually, I won't look at the comments either.
I'll have a think. While we're going.
I have the comments up here, so I'll know if you've been looking or not.
I don't know. Like, just on Finneran, like... it's going to be interesting. This will be his first ever senior football match.
He made one appearance for Blackburn.
Yeah. So his first senior start, if he does start. But technically, we were looking through the images today on Sportsfile. He obviously did play today in the friendly game against Real Murcia B, whatever or however that went. That's the most Football Manager friendly of all time. So
get the confidence up.
Yeah, it's interesting. Like he was extremely impressive in the under-17 World Cup. Probably him and Michael Noonan, and Jade Newman and Vinnie Leonard were probably the players that probably stood out the most.
Just before you go on, just add another one into that. Keane McMahon-Brown won Burnley's Academy Player of the Year there the other night, and I personally, he obviously wasn't talked about that much because I think he started one of the games on the bench. Him and Grady McDonald, I think, were competing for the same position, but I thought he was very impressive, and I'd be very keen to see if he gets on next year, especially with Burnley being in the championship. I'd say he'll get a bit of an opportunity there, but
he scored a couple of goals in that tournament and Grady McDonald's another one who obviously is very highly rated, who Canada were kind of extremely disappointed to lose to the Irish setup.
He'll need a move, I think.
Of course, he's in Belgium now.
Yeah, I don't think he's getting too much of a look in.
When you look back at the under-17 team, because that tournament was on the World Cup was on RT television, and we actually kind of got excited by it. Now the tournament is different, that Ireland might qualify nearly every year now because of the way Gianni Infantino and the under-17 World Cup is these days, and how he's kind of pandered to his power base. We get to see a lot more of these lads coming through, especially if the games are on the TV. I thought Rory Finneran last year in that summer tournament was excellent. And a type of midfielder that we don't have a lot of and we struggle to produce. So,
I think I think that's the point really, is the biggest one is I can't recall off the top of my head players like Finneran, what we think Finneran is going to be like from the limited time that we've seen him with the under-17s. That we think it's going to be like, and I think even if you look at this squad, there is some excellent midfielders in there, the likes of Jason Mullumby and Conor Coventry, Jason Knight as we know, but maybe a slightly different profile to Finneran. And yeah, that's what we've been looking for in our shirt.
Absolutely, and we're always looking for that, and we always will be looking for that. You know what I mean? There will be a point in time, and that's how kind of football operates, and there's maybe a deeper conversation to have around why we're not producing those type of players, but I can envisage a time where we've got a couple of those players and we're looking for something else. Also, we are looking for a big industrious midfielder as well too, you know, so there's different sort of things that we are on the hunt for there. And I think this is exciting, of course it is, but it should be noted too, and not to take away from him in any way, shape or form, he's not the only one of these players that we do kind of have. Like, you're looking at Jacob Devaney as well. Obviously he's not going to be in this squad because he's over in Scotland and St Mirren are still tipping away. Like, he's someone who I'd love to see involved in the next squad, and I want to talk about Rory Finneran, of course, but there's an abundance of these young sort of midfielders that are, as you say, on the face of it, slightly different to what we have. Now, whether when they get into men's senior football properly, and we have seen Jacob Devaney do that over the last couple of months, it'll be interesting to see if that profile of that they've shown at youth levels and all that sort of stuff translates to the senior game, because we often see that it doesn't. And that's not to throw any water on the excitement we have around Rory Finneran, because I would love him to be the answer to all of our problems. And hopefully he is, and hopefully we do get to have a good look at him on Saturday, because, as you say, it's exciting to have a profile of midfielder like this, for sure.
Is the game on TV?
So, it's not officially slated for RT at the moment. It remains to be seen if the FAI might stream it on YouTube, okay, but it's not in the RT listings. And obviously it's not an official, it is a friendly, but it's not a UEFA competition, so there's no UEFA, basically international feed that goes straight that RT can just pick straight off. So RT would have to send out a van, production team, link up pulp cables, TV, cameras, everything. So
we'll have to see if they do that.
We'll have to see if it goes ahead. It's not in the RT listings.
Okay.
There is a chance that the FAI could stream this, is the only thing I would say.
For free?
I would imagine if the FAI, like we've seen the FAI stream underage games before.
It might be on YouTube. On YouTube.
Look, the way it's going these days, you wouldn't know. Yeah. Before we move off this squad, because obviously there's a lot of players on club duty, as it is still club duty for some players this weekend. One player out of the seven has been correctly identified in the YouTube comments, and that's Carroll Leary with Robbie Keane.
Yeah. And should also add that Carroll Leary is the only comment we have received, so nobody's gotten it
wrong. Nobody's gotten it
wrong.
So
the comments have 100% hit ratio here at the minute.
Yeah.
David Wilson, take us away. How many of the other six can you name?
Troy Parrott.
Yeah,
I have Parrott in my list as well, by the way. I also had Robbie Keane.
I was going to think about it there. But
go on, who else do you have before he carries on?
I have Evan Ferguson.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's four left. Give us a clue. Midfielders, defenders, goalkeepers. Gavin Bazunu.
No. So there's a winger within the last 20 years. Very tricky winger.
Aidan McGeady.
Yeah. Oh, and then I don't know if you're going to get the other
go
three.
On, give us some.
What era?
One in 1980.
So he would have been what, 17 in 1980?
Terry Phelan.
He played 15 years. So he could have played 1980.
Nah, go on. Who is
21 caps for Ireland, 3 goals. Gary Waddock. Well, I think he's at is he Wellstone? Wellstone Rider? I think he's managing there at the moment.
Okay.
Carroll Leary has guessed Duffer.
No.
Incorrect, Carr. Incorrect.
The two that are left.
Max Ward says he's currently skiving off work for this.
Yeah. So. I know where Max works, so
there you go. Max, you're in butter, mate.
Jimmy Holmes, 1971.
Wouldn't have got that.
And the one that you definitely would not have got, Billy O'Neill. Not the Bray Wanderers, Billy O'Neill. Billy O'Neill from 1937.
Wow.
What age is John Giles in his debut? It must have been older.
Must have been older than that. Yeah.
Made his debut famously against Niels Lidholm, who was the star for Sweden in the 1950 at World Cup. That's just a random piece of John Giles knowledge that I have.
Yeah. So obviously it is International Week for the Republic of Ireland, but it is still club week for a lot of players and coaches around the world. And I'm going to start with a coach, because the Hungarian Cup was won last week by Ferencváros, managed by Robbie Keane, one of those players who are among the 8 youngest to make their international debuts for Ireland. Currently, Ferencváros are 1 point off the top of the Hungarian table going into the final day of the season. They're actually going to play the side that they just beat in the cup final, but obviously they're relying on results elsewhere.
What's the name of that team?
To go their way. The team that they beat in the cup final? I'll let you pronounce that, David, because I'm not going to butcher that one.
Zalegzerzegzeg.
Yeah,
I think.
And that's why I left it to you.
Yeah.
Played Man United, your beloved Manchester United.
Yeah, I remember they played Man United a long time ago, yeah.
Yeah. So look, Robbie Keane has silver on his belt this season with the Hungarian Cup, goes to win the Hungarian League. Rumours have been heating up, linking him to other clubs. most notably of which Celtic. Mm-hmm. Also, you know, he's not favoured for that job, I should stress. That goes to Jens Bertelaskiw, who is currently the Wales manager, the Motherwell manager, who Celtic play on Wednesday evening. How impressed have you been with Robbie Keane's stint in Hungary, if you have been impressed? And is there really a possibility that we could see this man go on and manage Celtic?
Impressed is maybe a strong word. In a league that French Farish have won every league title since 2018, I think, from kind of my research from last week. But look, he done a decent job in Europe. He got them, he nearly had them in the top eight of the Europa League, and they lost in the last game, I think, was that to Forest? Yeah. And they dropped out into the teams between 9th and 24th. Like, European football is where he's ultimately judged, and he done a pretty decent job. They got through a couple of rounds in the Champions League and then obviously dropped into Europa League. They were beaten by...
Probably sure it was Braga, I think, wasn't it?
Yeah,
Braga, maybe?
Yeah, Braga put them out, and we actually were watching a game in here the second leg. It was like 3:30 on a Wednesday, which is the ideal time for football. I think more football should be played during the day and during the week.
Earlier.
For 100%. And like Braga, like, spanked them, and you know, then they lost in the semi final. Like, Ferencváros are, like, if you look at Hungarian football, they are the kind of kingpins. They are the Celtic, or you know, they're the Ajax, they're
Rosenborg.
The
Rosenborg.
Yeah, like they win it. They've won it pretty much every year since they kind of sorted their stuff behind the scenes out. There's a great book, John Wilson wrote a great book about Hungarian football, and it kind of tells you about the power that Ferencváros have had for years and years and years. So it's kind of hard to judge him on the body of work he's done in Hungary, but the body of work he's done in Europe, let's say, has been pretty good. But he is still signing players from the Championship. He has the pick of players from Hungary as well, like Alexander Tuth has gone to Bournemouth, who looks like a pretty good midfielder as well. I can see him taking a job in the UK somewhere. I don't think it'll be the Celtic job.
Yeah, I can't see him managing Celtic. I think he's done a good job. You can't say he's done anything but a good job. I mean, he's gone into the best team in the country, and he's kept them as the best team in the country up until now, I suppose. And they more than likely won't go on and win the league at the weekend, just with the way things are in the table at the moment. But you can also factor in there that they've had a decent run in Europe, and maybe that's been their priority. There's also some rules over there by where you have to include X amount of Hungarian players under a certain age too, like, so that's another thing he's had to deal with that he probably won't have to deal with if he was to go to another country to the same degree, but that's not to take away, as you say, he has the best pick of players in Hungary and probably the best academy set up and all that sort of stuff,
and the biggest budget.
So yeah, so like, look, the job he's done has been good, that's what I would say. I think he's probably I can see him leaving Ferencváros at the end of the season and not walking into a job and possibly picking up a team early into next season.
Yeah. And are you thinking he's looking at the Premier League then?
I think he's looking at high Championship, low Premier League. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, he's done an interview with Sky Sports there fairly recently, and it was a bit like, I'm not saying it was, but it was a bit like, it kind of read to me, or it looked to me, it was a come and get me plea kind of to, I've done my time, I've bid my time across Europe, and now I'm ready for the next step. The next step, obviously, for in his case, would be to be in the Premier League or to be with Celtic.
He has spoken about not like feeling the need to return to the UK because he's not from the UK, he's from Ireland. So that would lead you to believe that he would want to go and stay possibly in Europe. But in my head, I look at it and I just kind of think, I think the Premier League, the Championship, is more likely than the continent, per se. You know?
It was after the pumped Rangers in a game in the Europa League. And he spoke, he was like, people should follow my example and leave UK football and go and try themselves in the continent. To kind of, you know, you're faced with maybe a dressing room with more nationalities and different people come from different backgrounds, and you have to try and kind of blend that all together. And don't get me wrong, Ferencváros is maybe an easier club to do that because just of the power and the budget you have. Like, if you look at the rest of the teams in the Hungarian league, Gyuri, Paxi, Debrecen,
MTK Budapest,
who are obviously a historic team, Ujpest and Puskás Academy, like, do any of those teams ever qualify for a Conference League or Europa League? Like, we don't really see it.
Yeah, do you see the Brest in the odd time?
Yeah.
Puskás Academy are a fairly new team as well.
Yeah, they are. So, like, the investment that has gone into Hungarian football has been like supersonic, especially in the Orban era. Now, obviously, that Orban era is now done. So, yeah, the league was set up in a way where Ferencvaros were ultimately the best team by a fair considerable distance. Like, they had the budget to buy, to get a player like someone like Naby Keita, who obviously was in the Premier League with Liverpool.
Someone like Callum O'Dowd.
Yeah, like Callum O'Dowd as well.
Look, they like explicitly only play in Europe?
Yeah, which is so weird.
Competitions,
if you're a Crystal Palace or a team that's going to lose a manager in the next, a Premier League team that's going to lose a manager in the next, maybe Fulham, obviously Marco Silva could be going. Are you looking at Robbie Keane or are you looking at someone else? I think you're maybe looking at someone else. Like, what's the Robbie Keane style of football? We don't know because we don't watch a lot of Ferencvaros.
Yeah, we don't know.
You'd have to imagine directors of football and sporting directors of those clubs will have watched Robbie Keane's football. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah.
I think you're probably, that's a fair assessment though. I'd be surprised if he was first option for any Premier League team.
Like Palace were linked with him and it looks like they want Andoni Iraola, which is like...
That's bizarre, man.
Which is the most obvious one. Obviously, be going for Iraola, but obviously Chelsea are going for him too. So.
Yeah. Sorry, I mean if Iraola was to go to Palace, it would be a bizarre move. As opposed to Palace appointing Iraola would be a great move.
Saturday, 4:15, Ferencvaros versus David Wilson.
Zalaegerszeg.
In the final day of the Hungarian season, a couple of players obviously are still involved in playoff run-ins, in title run-ins. We might start with the championship playoffs, considering they're top of the mind after last night's win for Hull City away at the Den, which was oh so sweet for John Egan.
Yeah,
Matthew Brennan, take it away.
Yeah, no, I did. I opted for this last night over the Spurs game, which I know a lot of people will say, "Oh yeah, try hard and whatever."
Premier League slop,
trying to be different, but proper football going on, no VAR. Proper conversation after the games, not disputing refereeing decisions, just appreciating the game for what it is. But John Egan was at the heart of it, really at the heart of it for Hull there last night. The first leg was on Friday night. It was the first playoff game and it was fairly atrocious, fairly drab. Nothing really happened until the last 15 minutes. A couple of subs came on and it got a bit of life into it, but came away with the game at 0-0, and Millwall were expected, I suppose, to put their stamp on it and take it away from Hull, because Hull obviously only snuck in really the last day of the season, having been in and around the playoffs all season and finishing the league quite weakly, whereas Millwall were right in the hunt for automatic promotion on the final day. And John Egan's had a great season with them. Hull have had a really weird season in that it's been very good, and it's been unexpectedly very good, because they had a bit of a transfer ban and haven't been able to bring players in, and it sort of limited their owner as to what he could do. And he's kind of moved away from signing. He still has managed to get a couple in, but a lot of his signs have come from around Europe, over in Turkey and all that sort of stuff, which is where their managers come from as well. And he's kind of resorted to signing a lot of championship players. I mean, like, you're looking at Ollie McBurney there, who's hit the world of light, which has been amazing. And John Egan is another one of those too. I know he was there already, but he spoke during the season about whether he thought John Egan would be a crucial player for him at the start of the season, and he basically said no. And here we are. He was excellent last night. He led by example. Typical John Egan performance. Like, I texted you during the game. I was like, you just love John Egan in your team. No matter who you're playing for, you love him in your team. And towards the end of the game, they're 2-0 up and he's bombing forward. He was in on goal at one point and he didn't get given the pass by Lewis Kumas, who came off the bench for Hull, and he didn't get given. And he absolutely tore into him. He was like, what are you doing? Why are you not giving me that ball? And I think he was a bit tired and he didn't get back for quite some time, but they weathered the storm. The first goal I need to mention, actually, for the football nerds out there, Mohamed Belloumi came off the bench for Hull. Bit of a funny one where they got an injury and he wasn't ready. He didn't have his boots on, didn't have his shin pads on, and Yakirovich was absolutely tearing into him. He came on, scores this worldly of a goal, has an unbelievable assist, a ball with like a Travella outside of the boot over to Joe Gellhart, and scores. But he's actually the son of Lakhdar Belloumi. I don't know if you're familiar with who he is. Widely regarded, this is something if we ever got the chance to do something a bit weird, widely regarded as the greatest Algerian footballer of all time. So if you have a bit of time to yourself, go and dig into it, because it's an interesting story. But great game, and John Egan, back to the point, was great. Not much Irish involvement outside of that. Danny McNamara was on the bench for Millwall, didn't get a run out, and Will Smallbone's nowhere to be seen at the minute. So it'd be interesting to see what he does during the summer, obviously, when he returns to Southampton.
Yeah.
Lewis Kumas, obviously, another son of Jason. A famous footballer, Jason Kumas. And another one of those Welsh young footballers who they called in quite early and capped immediately. David, John Egan.
Yeah, delighted from considering like the injuries he's had and where he's come from as well, and how he's kind of came back and got himself back into an Ireland squad. He's 34 in October. He's had a couple of really serious injuries, especially one kind of early on in his career. You can tell that the likes of Hemer Grimson and Paddy McCarthy and John O'Shea absolutely love John Egan because they keep calling him into the squad, and he seems to be like one of these leaders alongside Seamus Coleman as well, and in a team that maybe lacks a bit of experience, he probably brings so much. Because he's playing in the Championship, you're thinking, oh, is John Egan really the guy that Ireland should be hanging their hat on maybe in squads, and should they go for someone younger, or should they go for someone maybe with a bit less experience? But I think John Egan has proven that he's still like unbelievably valuable to the Ireland team, and it's great to see him playing with Hull City. We thought maybe he could have maybe not played in the Championship, maybe he could have maybe been dropped down to League One at one stage, and he's been part of this kind of unbelievable season for a team that has like kind of a bunch of ragtag players that have played all over the Championship and maybe even lower than that.
Matt Crooks had most of his career in League One playing with Rotherham and ended up getting relegated with them loads as well.
And then you've got like players like really interesting young players like Toby Collier, Joe Gellhart, obviously, who's scored in the Premier League, and Lewis Kumas, and you've got Ollie McBurney, who had a little bit of a trip over to Las Palmas and in the Canaries, and now he's back playing and banging in goals. And if anyone likes stupid viral TikTok videos, go and look at the Hull City page because it's hilarious.
Yeah, it is. It's up for a certain vintage. Some of you probably won't return to the podcast after going and watching that. But Toby Collier's not getting much of a run, but he was decent at the start of the season, or when he joined there after being at West Brom. But yeah, they've an eclectic bunch of players. They really do. And the defense they've got there is, people remember Sammy Ajayi as well, who was
he's still playing for Nigeria,
Nigerian. Charlie Hughes, I'd be very familiar with from his time at Wigan, and Hull got him for a very cut price, and he's been one of the best defenders in the Championship this season, and he'll be playing in the Premier League regardless of how this goes on for Hull. Wouldn't say it's a fairy tale story, just purely because they've got this transfer ban because they
spent too much
outside their means. But they did survive relegation on goal difference last season, so to be where they are now. And Hull as well, here's a little bit of a stat for you, have won every single playoff campaign they've been in. They've only been in two, but they've won both of them. Millwall have never won a game at home in the playoffs in the Championship. I don't know how many they've played, but it's more than one.
Yeah, Nottingham Forest were like that. They had a terrible record in the playoffs. I remember famously they got beaten by Yeovil one time. Yeah. But just Sergei Jakirovic, the head coach of Hull, is an interesting story. Bosnian Croat, born in Mostar, played all over like kind of the Balkans in his career, and then had a bit of a nomadic coaching career, and then ends up at Hull City, and he's one game away from the Premier League. Kind of shows you
shows you
what football is like. It's pretty exceptional.
Long may that Millwall record stay that way. Obviously, Hull will face the winners of Southampton versus Middlesbrough. We won't talk about that too much because that's on this evening.
Yeah.
But obviously, a lot of Irish involvement there between.
That's Spygate, obviously.
Oh, yeah, sorry.
It's one of those interesting things.
It's interesting the fact that it's happened again after already happening a couple of years ago.
His poor old intern is just getting to blame. He was doing that himself. He wanted to impress. We had nothing to do with it, and now all the other Championship clubs are claiming they did react very quickly to our new set piece routines.
It's going to be interesting what happens there.
It's going to be a smashing game. Please just watch that, whatever you're doing, just watch it. It's going to be brilliant.
I was like, I want the Middlesbrough to go up, just because a northern team. I like the northern teams, as Jack Charlton would say. I like to see them do well, but I'm thinking I like to see Southampton win, and I just want to see other fans just going like this.
Yeah,
I would enjoy it.
Bielsa lead style.
Did you see the whole fans last night in the final whistle chanting "Mauled by the Tigers" over the Millwall fans? The Millwall fans are having to be held back, but the students are roaring back at them.
It's brilliant because it's such a rage baiting chant.
Brilliant.
It's great.
Yeah.
I also, though, in the same vein, would get great laugh out of Middlesbrough winning and doing the spy thing back to Southampton fans.
True.
And the players doing that. I would like that as well.
That Leeds Derby playoff from a few years ago was outrageous. Yeah.
Playoffs are just amazing.
That's the standard, isn't it? Yeah. That's like peak.
I was watching, actually, 13 years to the day since Troy Deeney got Watford through that semi final, which they went on to lose in the final, which I think everyone forgets about. But we were watching it. It was on telly this morning. They were showing the replay of it. But tonight will be great. Like, as you say, loads of Irish involvement, Finnazaz and Ryan Manning on the Southampton side. You're going to have Alan Brown and Alex Gilbert might make an appearance. He's been kind of in and out of the team for them.
Hayden Hackney's injured.
Hayden Hackney's out for today. She'll be back for the playoff finals. That'd be a great boost if they do get there. But Middlesbrough are one of these like unbelievably pleasing teams to watch on the eye. If anyone did manage to watch the first leg on Saturday, they played Southampton off the park, to be frank. They were like unbelievable. But that's something they'd be doing to pretty much every team the entire season, and just not being able to score. And I'm not sure if that's due to the fact that their strikers just aren't up to it, or if there's an underlying problem there. But they'll be raging now tonight, like, if they don't. They spent, I think, as much time as anyone else in the top two. So if they don't manage to go up, they'll be annoyed. But the game itself will be brilliant because Hampton are on this outrageous run that everyone's familiar with at the minute. And sure Fine Gael and Ray Manning will have a part to play. Obviously, the main underlying story there outside of the spying is the fact that Fine Gael spent so much time at Middlesbrough and kind of left under a bit of a cloud. And when he left, he sort of said that he feels something along the lines of it feels good to be at a Premier League level club. And Middlesbrough fans obviously didn't take that too well. I don't think he meant it in that way, but obviously they were going to take it in that way. So every time he touched the ball on Saturday, obviously Middlesbrough were at home, he got a fairly bad reception. So I think he'll still get a bit of that tonight from the away fans. But yeah, that'll be a cracking game.
A couple of other Irish involvements in the playoffs down in League One. Louis Barry Stockport 1-0 up against Stevenage. Johnny Kenny's Bolton 1-0 up against Bradford. Obviously, unfortunately, Johnny Kenny was going to miss that game. He's going to miss the rest of the season with a pretty bad injury. Remains to be seen if that's going to affect his chances of maybe a permanent move to Bolton or elsewhere in the summer. Obviously, then won't be involved in the Ireland camp for the games against Qatar and Canada. So those games are on Wednesday and Thursday. Just one other player who is involved in a run-in. Obviously, John Patrick says that Rem didn't go up. They lost in the playoffs in League 2. They got back into League 1. But Liam Scales is now well and truly in a title race in Scotland. It looked like this was maybe done after Hearts beat Rangers last weekend. And I kind of thought, there's no way Hearts blow this from here. And all of a sudden now, thanks to Dyson Mita's wonder goal, and amongst many other things, and a bit of luck maybe in the game as well, in the Glasgow Derby, Celtic are well and truly in this race. And Liam Scales, who I think, David, you pointed out on Sunday, was absolutely outstanding.
Yeah, so for the second goal, which maybe is more important because, you know, when the game's 1-0, yeah. Liam Scales gets the ball in his left foot. He steps out of defence. Kieran Tierney makes a great run, like a typical Kieran Tierney run. And Liam Scales drops it right in his toe in behind. Tierney obviously plays the ball across, and Maeda gets across the defender and scores. And Liam Scales was someone I think all Celtic fans could admit to it was maybe castigated for a long time, as he was the player that came from the League of Ireland and he's not good enough, and he's shown that he's way more than good enough, and he's developed into maybe the best defender in Scotland. He's played 35 games this year. He started 32 of them. He doesn't have any goals, but he's got 3 assists as well from kind of set pieces. He got a really important one away to Aberdeen there recently. And yeah, like the development of his career is an example to everybody who is in the League of Ireland or is wanting to kind of aspire to bigger and better things. Obviously, he came through at UCD. I remember watching him at UCD, and he was this cultured left-footed defender who you don't get a lot of, and they're kind of few and far between. He obviously went and had trialed at Man City 23s, and he obviously done well there. And then he goes obviously to Shamrock Rovers, plays left of a back three, and also plays left wing back, which also came in pretty handy for Ireland against Hungary that time in Budapest at the end of last year. Went to Celtic, didn't really work out from initially. Went on loan to Aberdeen, has kind of found himself back in the team just because kind of Celtic kind of were low on bodies, and he's just developed into just a brilliant defender. He's captained Celtic at Ibrox in a win in the cup in a huge game where he was excellent. And I can't really say enough positive things about him because he holds himself in this kind of he's a leader. And we actually interviewed him around this time last year, ahead of the Scottish Cup final, and it's just kind of the epitome of calm, and is like has gone from strength to strength over the last couple of years, and he was brilliant again on Sunday, and he's very key to what Ireland will want to achieve over the next couple of years because you don't have a lot of left-footed defenders. And yeah, he's been absolutely excellent, and I'm kind of delighted for him as well because he's taken maybe the path less travelled, and he's kind of got right to the top as well at a huge club in Celtic. So I'm hoping he gets his flowers eventually.
Yeah, obviously still in the hunt for the Scottish Premiership and the Scottish Cup final as well to come against Neil Lennon's Dunfermline. A man who knows all what it's like to play for Celtic and to be in the dugout at Celtic. Darren O'Dea, former Republic of Ireland international, was on Off-Ball Rec this week speaking about another man who's at Celtic for, who's unfortunately not in the Irish squad this week, Boston O'Wahl. So here's Darren O'Dea on Off-Ball Rec this week. Have a listen.
I'll annoy Boston if I talk about this. Do you know what? He's just so good that it's like, I thought he was a centre-back, but that's not saying I don't think he can play in midfield. My thing with Boston was, you've so much talent and basically every attribute going, if you don't make it as a top level player, something is wrong and it's going to be on his toes, because there's nothing the kid lacks other than, at the time I was working with him, experience, which now he has plenty of. So I don't really care where he plays. I just hope he maximizes his potential, because his potential is absolutely enormous. He's one of the best kind of young players I've worked with. He's a fantastic kid, fantastic guy. And yeah, I think he likes midfield because he's got a bit of mischief about him. He's got so many attributes. He can drive the game. He can kind of break it up, but he certainly has got incredible talent with the ball at his feet. I just felt as a centre-back, he's got elite level qualities. But in all honesty, when I watch Boston, I just enjoy watching him anywhere. Fingers crossed for him. So
he can play centre-back for his club and midfield for Ireland and you'll be happy?
As long as he's playing and he's happy, I'm happy, yeah.
That was Darren Adee on Off Ball Rex Week, speaking about Boston Wael, who of course was at Celtic, now on Stoke City shores these days, not in the Ireland camp, unfortunately, this week. A really great chat with Darren Adee on Off Ball Rex Week.
He was very good. He's very good, and it's particularly one for the Celtic fans as well. There's a lot of interesting stuff in there about the fact that they've not really been getting the best out of their academies, which Darren Adee, of course, was involved with for a long time. I think he was the manager of the B team for 4 years between 21 and 25. And there's a lot of Irish links in there as well, of course, with Rocco Vada being one of those players that never really got a chance. Boston Wael again, never really got a chance. And then some interesting stuff as well, but like I said, Ben Doak as well leaving and going on for, or Ben Gannon Doak going on leaving for some big money as well, obviously with Bournemouth now. So some good stuff in there on that, and also about his kind of keenness to, he's been in touch and talks with the FAI and all that sort of stuff as well, and how he's had some of the youth teams over with Celtic doing some coaching, player coaching development, all that sort of stuff. And he does really seem like the type of fella who's going to be heavily involved, like, and is keen to help out, which is important as well, because we're not going to get to hear from Jeff Hendrick as well, who's on Off the Ball Breakfast yesterday, and he was speaking about confidence and how it's such a weird thing, and is it real, is it not real, how do you kind of get around it, and how do you get it back when you don't have it, and when you do have it, how do you keep it. And he spoke about not really being able to talk to anyone about it, and feeling as though if he was saying it to his manager, it could backfire on him, and he might say, well, if you're not confident, I'm not going to play, I'm going to put someone else in. And then it's important for the likes of the younger players coming through that are going to be in these camps to have the older members of the staff with them, as we're seeing with the Ireland game on Saturday. You know, you've got Darragh O'Shea there. They're not older members, but they're experienced as far as being in the camp goes. And being able to talk to your teammates is one thing, but also having figures like this in the way that Paddy McCarthy will be that for Ireland as well. And Jim Crawford's going to be in with this camp as well. Paddy McCarthy's probably actually not going to be here over the weekend, is he?
No, he's not.
Jim Crawford, like, so. Yeah. But anyway, just having figures like that there who've been there and done it are very important. And not necessarily, it's not on Darren O'Dea to give back to Ireland or give back to the FAI or give back to the sport of football in Ireland. But if we can do it in such a way that we can make that happen, then we obviously absolutely should. So it's well worth going checking out. You can get it on your podcast feeds and YouTube channel and all that sort of stuff as well.
Yeah, great chat, Darren Adee, and All Sport Breakfast this week. Just a couple of more things before we wrap up. Troy Parrott scored yet again in the Eredivisie. Obviously, Alkmaar have already secured Europa League football by winning the Dutch Cup. A lot of comments on Instagram, on Twitter, by Troy Parrott I've seen this week from Coventry City fans. And a couple of journalists as well I'm seeing linking Troy Parrott towards Coventry City. What do we make of this?
Don't go. Coventry City have done an unbelievable job under Frank Lampard to get back to the Premier League. And have got the best out of those players that they have, but they're going to need serious investment to have any hope of staying up in the Premier League. We've seen it, like, this season and the last couple of seasons has been dog eat dog. And this current season, in fairness, the promoted teams have done pretty well. Like, Burnley are obviously going to go down. Wolves obviously are going to go into the Championship as well, which is, they're going to be a huge club in the Championship, and either West Ham or Spurs, which like should realistically be nowhere near the relegation zone. But
Sunderland and Leeds have done Sunderland very well in different ways. You know, yeah. Sunderland had a flying start, Leeds have had a flying finish, and they've both invested.
Yeah,
Sunderland have invested heavily. Leeds have invested not as heavily, but heavily nonetheless.
Sunderland spent over 150 million, I think, euros.
Yeah. Basically about a whole new squad.
Yeah. And signed, like, players that are, like, destined for bigger things, Noah Siddiqui at the weekend. Yeah, yeah. No one would have watched Sunderland Man United on Saturday because it was a crap game.
They've got lives.
But exactly that. And Noah Siddiqui looks like he's going to go and be a superstar. But I don't know about Coventry City. Like, you're going to be in a team where you're going to struggle to get chances. You're going to probably be behind the ball a lot of the time. you're going to have to play in the counter attack. You're going to have to hold up the ball really well, which he's very good at doing. I would prefer to see Troy Parrott in a team where he's going to get loads of chances and score loads of goals. I'd stay away from England.
I'd probably stay away from England myself too. But you mentioned the investment they're going to have. I think they will have investment, obviously. So if you are going to sign for Coventry, just be sure that you're going to be joining a team that's going to look vastly different to the one you're looking at right now. And I'm sure, look, that kind of groundwork will be done. Listen, you never know how these things might work out, but I do think the move to Europe, as we've been saying, and everyone has sort of been saying, I say move to Europe, move to staying in Europe, staying on the continent, going to Germany or going to Spain or going to Portugal or wherever it may be, going to Italy. I would sooner see him do that. I don't think there's any great need for him to come to the Premier League, but I can imagine that he would be getting offered a lot more cash in the Premier League, and that matters.
Yeah, that's always a big factor, isn't it?
Even at that, Troy Parrott should have ambitions to be at a club. No offence to Coventry City, but at a club bigger or with European aspirations in, rather than Coventry City. Like, don't get me wrong, Coventry City could be a team where they go and they stay up in the Premier League and they do weirdly well. But I think he should be thinking, I'm going to a team that's going to play in the Europa League or the Champions League or the Conference League. Like, if he stays at AZ Alkmaar, he's playing the Europa League next season after winning the Dutch Cup. So I think he should have higher ambitions than Coventry. Like, I would say go back to Spurs ahead of go back to Coventry, you know?
Yeah, well, that is one that remains to be seen. I've seen a lot of people talking if Spurs go down, they should just go all out for him and tell him you're going to be the man to lead us back up and then stay up there with us.
I'd be staying a million miles away from that if they went down.
Yeah, it remains to be seen. Obviously, Mason Mealy as well would be looking for a look in if Spurs do go down. Before we look ahead to this weekend, I should remind you that the Green Scene on Off the Ball is brought to you by Cadbury, a proud sponsor of the Republic of Ireland national teams. Matthew Brennan, you will be in Murcia at the weekend. You've been looking at the Granada camp a little bit. I should preface, you're going as a fan. You're one of the few lunatics who decide, you know what, no World Cup. I'm going to go to Mercy anyway.
I wish that's actually what it was. I just kind of happened to book a trip to Valencia, which obviously is not all that near Mercy, but it's not a million miles away. It's on the same patch of land.
The Iberian continent.
Yes, so I'm
the peninsula.
Which is, of course, notably small. But no, I'm going to Valencia for a few days, so I'm going to make the trip down to Mercy on Saturday. Might as well. So I'm looking forward to it. Yeah, I'm looking forward to a bit of sun.
You looking forward to seeing the Grenada squad?
Yeah.
Can I go through the teams very quick? Just the teams that these clubs play for.
Yeah, just one. Okay, I'll just. Yeah, okay, go away. Sorry.
Grenada Police, St. John's, Spokane Velocity, which is in the States, Queen's Park Rangers, which is in Grenada. Yeah. St. David's, Grenada, Dagenham and Redbridge, Colchester United, Notts County, Bedford Town, Sunderland, Camarhogna, Grenada, All Saints United. That's Antigua, I think. Antigua. And then you have Wimbledon, Lewis, Bromley, Paradise FC International, which is back in Grenada, Sutton United, Phoenix Rising, the States, St. John's, Grenada, Mansfield Town, obviously England, Otero College in the States, North Stars and Hurricanes, which are both in Grenada. So when we're like 1-0 down after 20 minutes on Saturday, how much panic are you going to put into it?
We're not going to be out there after 20 minutes.
Yeah, I'm not going to be panicking either. It makes no difference. It doesn't matter.
Remember you were 1-0 down to Andorra under Stephen Kenny, and we thought, like, is he going to be sacked?
And how did that finish?
It was to finish 4-1, but you were still 1-0 down to like the 50th minute, I think.
Yeah, and then Troy Parrott did what Troy Parrott does.
Yeah.
For those of you of a younger generation, you might be familiar with the concept of hashtag United.
Yeah.
And Jermaine Francis is the Sutton United player who was playing at hashtag United only a couple of years ago. So some people might be familiar with him. And Miles Hippolyte is there as well, I think, is he? Yeah, he's at Wimbledon.
Yeah.
He's not a terrible player. So,
none of these players are terrible.
No, well, obviously not in the context of the fact they're playing for their country, but in the context of the wider footballing sphere, they could be described that way by some people. Mm. There's no one in this team that's really on the level of anyone who's in our team. So we shouldn't be losing, but it makes no difference. I don't think, I won't be coming on here next Tuesday berating everyone in the squad if we lose 2-0 to Grenada. I'm looking forward to it. I'm excited. There's nothing negative that could possibly come out of this camp unless someone picks up a horrific injury, which hopefully they don't.
They are missing DiMaggio Wright Phillips, which the son of Sean Wright Phillips and the grandson of Z.V. and Wright. He's still probably in season. Yeah, he's playing with Beerschot in Belgium.
Who plays with Spokane?
Spokane is Siobhan John Brown.
Yeah. Siobhan John Brown.
Siobhan John Brown.
You know, this is why I gave you a look when he said Spokane. Spokane is the second, I think it's the second highest populated Irish American city in America. Oh, or it's okay. Like whatever the
Brown.
It's really like there's a lot of Irish in Spokane basically. Yeah. That's why I was looking on
Washington.
I wonder,
some of the names are great. There are a lot of like double first names.
Yeah.
It's like you've got like Frank as a second name, you've got Philip as a second name, Francis as a second name.
Yeah. Grenada, Charles, obviously the country that Ronald Reagan famously invaded
Gabriel
in the 1980s as well. That's what I knew, Grenada. Because I was thinking originally I'm going to be over there for Off the Ball reporting, Matthew's going to be over in the stands, and I was originally thinking Grenada, and then I remembered back to when the US invaded in the 80s, you know, Grenada.
Grenada
is what they always used to say.
America's notorious for pronouncing things correctly.
Yeah. That's what I was thinking. Maybe I'm actually correct that it is Grenada, but...
Remember the World Cup draw? What you call the ice hockey player?
Gretzky.
Wayne Gretzky. And he gets Curacao out like this and he goes
Curacao.
Yeah. So
that's what we're dealing with there.
He's Canadian as well, isn't he?
Yeah, he is.
Canadian, yeah. Yeah. Dustin Johnson's son-in-law. Wayne Gretzky, the golfer.
Of course, yeah.
Anyways, a little bit off topic.
Do you want to just do some fan comments in
here?
Yes,
very quickly.
They're kind of unnamed. The Owen Elding Irish passport situation, bit of a farce, product of the League of Ireland. Wouldn't be surprised if Jacob Devaney gets fast-tracked and plays for the Ireland senior team next month. Another high-potential player. Ireland needs to future-proof its diaspora players and the players born in Ireland but are of other nations' descent. Yeah, fair. We kind of spoke about that earlier on in the pod. And one last one is, Declan Rice, his heart said Ireland, but his head said England. And when his agent got involved, all the extra money he could earn, it's not a straightforward decision for players. Do you think it's more complex and nuanced than that? Conor Bradley is a different situation. No one knew how good he was going to be, and the North got there first. I'm not sure if I entirely agree with that.
Yeah, I was at...
it's our job to find out he's going to be as good as he is.
Yeah,
going
exactly.
To be.
Well, that's what I was going to say. I was at a briefing with the FAI Director of Football, John Martin, last week, and that's one thing he was kind of hammering home to us, that our talent ID has to be so much better than it has been.
Yeah.
He named Chris Atherton being one that we've gone early and got him early. And we really have to be a lot more proactive on that. And Conor Bradley was one of the players who was name checked of, you know, maybe we kind of messed up a little bit here and we should have got him in over the line.
He's got a really horrible injury, Conor Bradley, doesn't he?
Yeah.
That's a horrible injury.
He's had a couple of injury issues over the last.
Yeah, but this one seems as though this is a serious.
Yeah. Hopefully he gets back to where he wants to be, because, tell you what, Liverpool are in dire need of a right back.
Yeah, as always, you can get in touch with us via social media, Off the Ball or Off the Ball Football, via email, thegreenscene@offtheball.com. We are going to be back next Tuesday live again from 2 p.m. Thank you for those who have been watching live on YouTube from 2 p.m. Get back to work. Stop skiving, as I think it is. Is that what they say in Monaghan?
It's a new word I've learned today.
Yeah, Mitchin was always the old Dublin term.
Mitchin is more to do with school.
Yeah, yeah, Sky,
you
Sky
explained
just,
it to us as a school scenario.
Yeah.
So. These are like kids to me.
Unk in the corner.
Heard of hashtag United.
I wouldn't blame for that. No. We will be back next week after Ireland have beaten Grenada in Murcia. We'll chat to you then, folks. Take care.
The Green Scene on Off the Ball with Cadbury, a proud sponsor of the Republic of Ireland football teams.